There were four cowboys inside the small adobe line shack. One was asleep on the bunk. The other three were sitting across a small table from each other playing cards.
Call.
They were playing for matches only, but that didn't lessen the intensity of their game.
There you are, fellas. Read 'em and weep.
Sandy, you son of a bitch. Where'd you get that ace?
Don't you know? I took it from Shorty's boot while he was asleep.
Sure to keep an ace in his boot?
You think he don't? I never knowed him to do anything honest when he could cheat.
The cowboy on the bunk raised his head.
That's the truth of it. Hell, it's the only way I can be sure to win. But Arn is just as bad.
Am not.
So's Curly.
Well, now you're right there. I will cheat if I think I can get away with it.
Hey, do either one of you know Jenny?
Jenny? Jenny who?
You know Jenny who. She's one of the whores down at the Desert Flower.
Oh, that Jenny. What about her?
You fellas think she likes me?
Do we think she likes you? Damn, Arnie, she likes anyone who has enough money to take her upstairs.
Ah, you're just talking. She won't go upstairs with just anyone.
You may be right about that. She won't go upstairs with Curly. She said he looked like death riding a gorilla.
How'd you get to be so ugly, Curly?
Mama says she was scared by a bear when she's carrying me, and some of that bear's ugly wore off. But speaking of Jenny, better not be no one messing around with her without paying unless they wanting to tangle with Tucker.
Tangle with who?
Tucker Godfrey. You know that bandy-legged little shit from the Flying J spread? He's got a cap set for Jenny, and if he sees anyone sniffing around her, why, he runs them right off.
You think I'm scared of Tucker? I could break that little pipsqueak over my knees like a piece of kindling.
Hell, any of us could. We could ever catch a little sumbitch without his gun. But he's damn good with that gun, and he has it with him all the time. Folks say he even has it with him when he goes to take a dump.
Unknown to the four cowpunchers, at that very moment, four men with rifles crouched outside on the edge of the hill and looked down toward the little building.
Shit! Arnie!
Curly felt a blow to his chest. Sandy went next, a bullet in his neck. Shorty, who had remained on the bunk, rolled onto the floor.
Oh, Jesus! What is this? What's happening?
Shorty! Shorty! I'm hit bad.
Shorty crawled over to Curly and saw the blood on his chest. The wound was sucking air, and Shorty knew it would soon be over for his friend. He put his hand on the wounded man's forehead. That gesture of comfort was Shorty's last mortal act.
Hold your fire! See any movement?
No.
Casey, how about you go up and see if anybody's still alive?
What do you mean, go up and see if anyone's still alive? Hell, you go up!
Fargo glared at Casey, then got up and, without caution, walked straight toward the shack.
What's that dumb son of a bitch trying to do? Show off?
Casey, Dagan, and Monroe watched as Fargo kicked the door open and went in. They waited to hear some sign of a struggle, or barring that, for him to come out and tell them it was all right to come in. A long minute went by.
What do you think happened?
What do you mean?
You think Fargo's dead?
Did you hear anything?
No.
Then I doubt he's dead.
How come he hadn't come out and told us anything?
I'll tell you why. 'Cause the son of a bitch has found the food, and he's eating it all himself.
Dagan started toward the line shack, and after only a moment's hesitation, the others went with him. They cautiously peered through the door into the shack. Fargo was inside, eating beans straight from the pot. He was sitting at the table, totally oblivious to the dead man whose head was leaking blood and brains right beside the pot of beans. There were three other men laying dead on the floor.
What the hell's been keeping you? Come on in and eat. Hurry up. We're going back after our money.
Going back? To Mesquite? You think that's the smart thing to do? I mean, seeing as you killed that man and all.
Dagan tore open a biscuit and filled it with beans.
Hell, what are you worried about, Casey? You didn't kill that fella. Neither did Monroe or me. The sheriff's going to be after someone's ass. It's going to be Fargo's. Right, Fargo?
Fargo glared at Dagan across the top of the bean pot.
So I figure if there's a chance of getting the money back by going back to Mesquite, then hell, shit, let's go.
The Tonka, there is food.
The Apache Quasi pulled a stick with skewered rabbit from the fire. It was roasted brown, and from it curled a wisp of aromatic smoke.
Why does he not come?
Maybe he has fallen asleep.
Give the meat to me. I will take it to him. And if he has fallen asleep, I will send him back. We have no place for anyone who cannot remain awake when he is keeping watch.
Quasi gave the meat to Chitopa, though he did so reluctantly because he didn't want to be the cause of his friend getting in trouble.
Natanka! Are you a child going to sleep when you should be awake? Natanka! Answer me!
Because it was dark, Chitopa didn't see Natanka until he almost tripped over him. Then he was so shocked by what he saw that he wasn't sure he was actually seeing it.
Natanka! Ah!
Chitopa ran back to the encampment. There, he grabbed his rifle and fired into the desert. The others followed suit. And for a long moment, the night was lit by the lightning-like flashes of the muzzle blast.
No! No! Do not shoot! I fire out of anger! It is a waste of ammunition!
Chitopa, what has happened?
Natanka, he was dead. His mouth was open. A stick stood in his mouth. At the top of the stick was Natanka's scalp.
Who did this thing?
I believe it was Delo Benanta.
Delo Benanta? Has the Birdman come for us?
Let him come for us. We will kill him. And then our medicine will be strong.
Chitopa stepped forward and raised his rifle over his head.
Delo Benanta! Delo Benanta! Do you hear me when I say I'm not afraid of you? Delo Benanta, do you hear me when I say I want you to come for me? Delo Benanta, do you hear me when I say I will kill you? I will kill you!
Falcon McAllister was some 100 yards away from the Indian encampment, standing behind a saguaro cactus and hidden by the dark.
I hear you. Now you hear me, Chitopa. Delo Benanta will kill you and all who ride with you. Before the sun rises, another of you will die.
Because of the echoes, Chitopa was unable to place Falcon by sound. Nevertheless, Chitopa fired where he thought Falcon was, but he and the others fired in a totally different direction. When the Indians quit firing, Falcon moved back through the darkness until he found his horse.
You still here, I see. Do you enjoy the show? I hope so, because it's just beginning.
Seems to me like we should be to Mesquite by now.
Dagan twisted around on his horse and examined the nighttime countryside, trying to figure out where the hell they were.
Yeah, we didn't ride this long from Mesquite before we decided to start back.
I didn't say we was going back to Mesquite.
Oh, God, the hell you didn't. That's exactly what you said when we was in that line shack having supper.
That's right.
I only said we was going back.
Well, if we ain't going to Mesquite, just where the hell are we going?
We're going to back trail and see if we can find Ponce. Look, truth is, I figure the son of a bitch is dead somewhere, and I figure to find him before somebody else does, because whoever finds him is going to find our money.
How do you know he's dead?
You heard what the doctor said. If Ponce didn't get that leg off, he's going to die. Well, Ponce didn't get the leg cut off.
But the doctor gave him all that medicine.
Laudanum ain't real medicine. It don't do nothing to cure you. It just stops the pain for a while. No, sir. Our boy Ponce's lying out dead somewhere, and he's got our money with him.
So how are we going to find him? I mean, we come up the trail after him, and we didn't see him nowhere.
Like as not, when it got real bad, he pulled off somewhere. Figured to rest up some. Only he didn't get rested up. What he got was dead.
You sure he would have come this way?
Where else did he go? He lived in Mesquite before he joined up with me. We went to the right place, all right. We just got there too fast is all.
So what are we looking for?
Any place that might make a good spot to hold up for a while. A big rock sticking out, maybe a gully or a cave.
A cave! A cave, I know where one is. And Ponce knows it too, because he pointed out to me once.
Where?
Oh, it's about 10 miles south of Mesquite.
All right, let's get.
It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and Falcon was downwind of the Indian encampment. He could smell them ahead, the body odor, the grease in the hair, and the pungent aroma of horse flesh gradually giving off the warmth of the sun from the day before. Once again, he had left his horse behind and slipped forward through the darkness, his knife clamped in his teeth as he crawled, slithered, and moved from cactus to rock, from rock to mesquite bush, from mesquite bush back to cactus. There had been some discussion among the Indians of posting a guard, but they finally decided that if the five of them stayed together, one man couldn't hurt them. And with that sense of security, they had thrown out their blankets and slept in the cool night air. Because he was moving with such caution, it took Falcon almost an hour to advance the last 100 yards. Now, he was less than 10 feet away from where the five men were sleeping. Falcon slithered on his belly for the last 10 feet and looked at the Indian nearest him. It wasn't Chitopa. Falcon hesitated for just a moment, thinking it would be better for him to go to each of the sleeping Indians until he found Chitopa than kill him. He finally decided that the risk was too great. Let Chitopa and the others awaken tomorrow to find still another of their number dead. Falcon put his hand across the Indian's mouth, pressed hard, squeezing his nostrils closed as well. The Indian woke up, then looked up at Falcon with eyes that were wide with fear. He saw the knife in Falcon's hand. Falcon plunged his knife into the Indian's heart. Within a few seconds, the Apache's eyes were opaque and lifeless. Falcon looked at the others to see if any of them had been disturbed by the action. Not one of them awakened. Once again, Falcon took a scalp. This time, using the knife of the Indian he had just killed, he pinned the scalp to the Indian's chest. Then he quietly vanished back into the night.
Fargo, that's the cave I was talking about.
All right. Monroe, you hang on to the horses. Dagan and Casey, come with me. We'll come up on both sides, so if he is in there looking out, he won't see us.
Pulling their pistols, the three men advanced toward the side of the hill, running forward at a crouch. Fargo went up to the right side of the cave opening. Dagan and Casey went up to the left. Fargo picked up a rock and indicated by a sign that he was going to toss it into the mouth of the cave. They waited, but nothing happened. Fargo indicated then that they should get closer to the cave opening.
Son of a bitch! What is that smell?
Fargo, you smell that?
Yeah.
You know what that is, don't you? It means Ponce's dead and his body has got good and ripe.
You think he's dead?
Hell yes, he's dead. What else would give off a stink like that?
And why don't you go in and have a look around?
Dagan started toward the cave, then stopped.
Hey, why don't we just throw a few rounds in there, just to be sure?
Not a bad idea.
Dagan poked out the empty shell casings, reloaded, then with his gun ready, stepped into the cave. Fargo and Casey watched him disappear into the blackness, and they waited for a long moment.
Holy shit!
What is it?
Get in here! You ain't gonna believe this!
Fargo and Casey started into the cave.
Hope this don't take long. That stinks so bad I can hardly breathe.
Did you find him?
Partly!
With their eyes growing accustomed to the darker interior of the cave, they saw Dagan standing about a quarter of the way back, looking down at something. Whatever he was looking at seemed to be the source of the smell.
Holy shit! What is that?
It's a leg. Ponce's leg.
Where the hell did Ponce find a doctor out here to cut off his leg?
He didn't find no doctor.
What do you mean he didn't? That's his leg, ain't it?
He cut it off his own self.
Son of a bitch! Who would do a thing like that?
Who would have figured that Ponce would have had the guts?
Didn't nobody never say he didn't have guts? Shit. Let's go.
Go where?
Back to Mesquite. The son of a bitch is there. I know he is.
With your sister? What if she's hiding him?
Then I'll kill the bitch.
There had been five who followed Chitopa from the camp when he left to carry the war to the whites. Now only two remained.
What type of man can come and go without being seen? He is a spirit warrior.
He is not a spirit warrior. He is just a man, like any other man.
No. He is not a devil. But he is not just like any other man. He is like an Apache. He can move like smoke through the night. He is very good. So we must be better.
How can we be better?
When has he attacked us?
When we sleep.
When we eat.
Yes. And then he comes to us. I say we will not wait for him to come to us. From now on, we will go to him. We will find where he sleeps. And we will find where he eats. And we will kill him.
Like all Apache, Chitopa, Turk, and Mensa were skilled trackers and ferocious warriors. But like many, they were used to white men who were badly deficient in those skills, so they had underestimated Falcon. That underestimation had proven fatal. Chitopa knew that Falcon was nearby and might even now be watching him. So, working from that premise, he decided to turn back upon their own trail. If they did that, Falcon would either have to retreat from them or lead the trail and make a new one. After backtracking for several hours, Chitopa saw a fresh horse dropping on the trail, and leaping down from his horse, he examined it. It was still soft.
We have found him.
Delo Bananta! Do you hear me? We have found you! We have found you and we will kill you! And after you are dead, we will cut your heart out and feed it to the dogs in our village! Delo Bananta! Do you hear me?
I hear you, Chitopa.
Falcon was less than 10 yards behind him. Chitopa and the others whirled toward the sound of the voice, and doing so, saw Falcon standing there, challenging him, guns holstered.
You dare to face us without your weapons?
I have my weapons.
Chitopa's smile grew broader as he brought his rifle around to bear. Falcon killed all three Indians before even one of them could get off a shot. He stood there for a moment after, smoke curling up from the barrel. Then Falcon went about his gruesome task. Fourteen-year-old Kinta was tending the herd of ponies as they grazed just outside the Apache village. He was proud to be given such a responsibility, for this was part of his training in becoming a warrior. Kinta had heard stories of bravery and wars fought well. He knew of great leaders and warriors such as Cochise, Geronimo, Juh, Nana, and Naiche. And perhaps one day, the name Kinta would join that list of brave Apache. Kinta saw three ponies galloping toward him. At first, he thought they were riderless. Then he saw that each of the three was carrying a burden of some sort. As the ponies came closer, he ran toward them, holding up his arms to stop them.
Ha! Ha!
The ponies, tired from their long run and glad to be back in familiar territory, stopped their running and immediately began peacefully grazing. They made no effort to move away as Kinta came closer to see what they were carrying. On each pony was a dead brave, belly down, his hands tied to his feet with strips of rawhide, and in their backs, pinned to them with their own knives, were their bloody scalps.
We must go to war to avenge this!
Taiche, one of the warriors of the village, had joined every other man, woman, and child who had come to the center circle to look upon the bodies of the three dead warriors.
No! But the whites have done this, Kitano! Can this go unavenged?
Do you see the scalps? This was not done by the whites. It was done by one white man.
One white man? Five warriors were with Chitopa, and you say that one white man did this? What one white man could best Chitopa and five warriors?
Falcon McAllister, the one we called Lobinanta.
How do you know it was Lobinanta?
Kitano pulled the knife from Chitopa's body and held out the scalp.
Lobinanta
has sent us a message, Kaiche. He has told us that, as he promised, he will take the scalps of his enemy.
We should go after him. Then after we kill him, we will make war with the whites for what they have done.
No. If more of our young men go after him, more of our young men will die. Falcon McAllister has said that he will kill and scalp the evil ones who killed my daughter. I say we will let him do as he promised he would do.
And I say we should go after him and kill him.
Haiche turned to face the others.
I will lead you. Who among you is not afraid to die? Who among you will ride with me to find and kill Globinanta? Come with me, all who are brave of heart. Come with me if you would avenge the death of our brothers.
Kaiche waited. Kenta started toward him, but he was grabbed by his father and pulled back. No one else moved. Kaiche glared at him for a long moment, then, in humiliation, stormed out of the circle.
Go back to your wiki-ups. Go and prepare for the burial of these brave, but very foolish men.
The sun was a red orb just above the eastern horizon when Fargo and the others arrived in Mesquite. Although the smell of frying bacon and coffee indicated that a few people were awake and preparing breakfast, the streets were empty, except for an old red dog that was sleeping on the front porch of one of the buildings. Seeing the riders come into town, the dog got up and ambled across the street in front of them, then took a position under another porch. Since the saloon was not open at this early hour, there was no question about anything getting in the way of the task at hand. The riders went directly to the house of Fargo's sister. This time, Fargo checked the lean-to behind Susie's house. There, tied to a hitching bar and nibbling contentedly on some hay, was a very familiar horse. Fargo got down from his own horse and patted the animal a few times.
He's here. This here's his horse. The son of a bitch put one over on us.
You think he's in the house?
Hell yes, the son of a bitch is in the house. Where else would he be?
Fargo went around to the front of the little house and felt for the key. The key wasn't there.
Ah, damn, the bitch moved the key. Okay, we'll take the noisy way.
Fargo kicked in the door. Then he, Dagan, Monroe, and Casey dashed in.
Shit! Fargo!
Give us our money, Ponzi.
It ain't here. Damn it, stop that!
I said give us our money.
I told you it ain't here.
Dagan, jerk the cover off in their bed. I want to have a look.
I'm naked, Fargo. You can let all these men see your own sister naked?
Hell, it ain't like you ain't never been seen naked before. Back when you first started whoring, I used to charge my friends a nickel to see you getting your legs spread.
You piece of shit.
Dagan, jerk the cover off in the bed like I told you to.
Dagan jerked the cover off. As Susie had said, she was naked. Dagan and the others stared at her as she tried without success to cover her breasts with one arm and the little dark spade of pubic hair with her other. Ponzi was naked as well. Fargo stared at Ponzi's discolored leg stump.
You really did cut off your own leg, didn't you? Christ almighty. Now where's the money?
I hid it.
You hid it? Where? Under the bed?
Fargo walked over to Susie's side of the bed, then leaned down to look underneath. Susie made a grab for Fargo's gun.
Fargo, get the hell out of here!
God damn it, Susie!
Susie! Susie! Fargo, you just killed your own sister!
The bitch had no business going for my gun! Now, I'm gonna ask you just one more time. Where's the money?
If I tell you, you won't have any reason to let me live.
You got it till I count to three to tell me where you hid that money, or I'll kill you dead right here, and we'll just go steal some more money somewhere else. One.
I ain't telling you shit.
Two.
All right, all right. I tell you, I buried it in a cave. It's back between here.
Thanks, Ponzi. We already know the way.
With Chitopa and his band of followers taken care of, Falcon was now able to turn his attention to Fargo Ford. He had learned from Sheriff Farrell that at least two of the men in the gang, Fargo Ford and Ponzi Elliott, were from Mesquite. so that seemed to be the logical place for him to start. It was mid-morning when Falcon rode into Mesquite, and as he came into town, he saw a crowd of people gathered around in front of the hardware store.
That there was Fargo Ford's sister. I sure as hell wouldn't want to be the person that done this when he finds out.
Falcon walked across the street to see what everyone was looking at. That was when he saw the two coffins that were propped up just behind the front window of the hardware store, which was also the undertaker's parlor. The body in one of the coffins was a woman. Her blonde hair was neatly combed, and she was wearing a lavender dress. Her arms were crossed in front of her chest, and she was holding an artificial rose. There was a bullet hole under her left eye. The other body was wearing a pair of overalls, with the bottom of one leg tied in a knot, showing that it was missing. He, too, had his arms folded across his chest, and he was clutching a Colt pistol in one of his hands. Although the undertaker had done what he could to clean the wound, it was easy to see how he died, because there was a purple hole in his chest. Neatly lettered signs identified each of the bodies. Under the woman's body, the sign said, Susie Ford. Under the man's body, the sign said, Ponce Elliott.
Where's the sheriff's office?
It's right down there across from the bank. Sheriff's name is Meeker. If you go on down there, why, like as not, you'll find him sitting in his office, reading dime novels.
Thanks.
The sheriff's office was filled with the aromatic smoke of pipe tobacco. The sheriff, a middle-aged, overweight man, was sitting at his desk, puffing on a pipe and reading a dime novel.
Sheriff Meeker?
That's me. Can I help you?
I hope you can. What can you tell me about the two bodies that are on display down at the hardware store?
The sheriff put the book face down on his desk.
Why do you want to know about them?
Because the man, Ponce Elliott, was riding with Fargo Ford, and I've been after him. Well, I've been after all of them, actually. Elliot Ford, Ethan Monroe, Casey Jackson, and Dagan Mendoza.
What do you mean, you've been after them?
Well, they robbed a money shipment back in Calabasas and killed the express agent. The sheriff caught them and put them in jail. And they broke out and killed four men. And later, they took a young Indian girl off a stagecoach and killed her.
They've been busy, haven't they?
I'm gonna make them answer for their crimes, Sheriff. I'm Falcon McAllister.
Mister, you aren't just fooling with me, are you? You really are Falcon McAllister? Well, I'll be damned!
Moving around the desk quickly and displaying a big smile, Sheriff Meeker reached out to grab Falcon's hand, then began pumping it fiercely.
Imagine me meeting Falcon McAllister. Why, I'm reading about you right now, in fact. It's all about how you, Jesse James, and Billy the Kid robbed a train back in Missouri. What is it you'd always say when you's facing down someone with a gun? Oh, yeah, I remember now. You say, get ready to eat supper in hell.
Yeah, something like that.
Falcon had never used that line in his life, but Sheriff Meeker wasn't the first person to bring up the dime novel phrase. Falcon had long since stopped trying to refute it, nor did he point out how unlikely it was for him, Billy the Kid, and Jesse James all to be participating in the same holdup.
Damn! I really like that line. Get ready to eat supper in hell. I may use it someday myself.
Be my guest. So back to my original question, Sheriff Meeker. What can you tell me about these two people who were killed?
Other than who they are, I can't tell you much. Some of Susie's neighbors reported hearing gunshots this morning about sunup.
Did they look into it?
Well, not at first. Gunshots ain't all that unusual around here. Most of the time, it's just a rancher, maybe a miner who stayed in town all night. No one figured this was any different.
When did you find out it was something different?
Well, sir, the undertaker lives in the back of the hardware store, and when he went back to the privy first thing this morning, why, he noticed that Miss Susie's door was open. He stepped up onto her stoop to tell her about it, and that's when he seen them. They's both lying there in Miss Susie's bed. Naked as jaybirds, both of them was.
Do you know who did it?
Nope, not yet. But in case you don't know it, Miss Susie was a pretty popular whore. So I figure it was probably someone who got jealous or something.
Maybe. But it could also have been Fargo Ford and his gang.
What? No. Didn't I tell you? Miss Susie was Fargo Ford's own sister. I don't think even someone as evil as Fargo would kill his own sister.
Unless she got in the way of money Fargo figures was his.
Well, I never thought of that.
Fargo is from Mesquite, ain't he? So if he came into town recently, someone might have seen him who recognized him.
If he came into town and someone saw him, yeah, they would have recognized him.
Then if you don't mind, I think I'll ask a few questions around town to see what I can find out.
No, I don't mind at all. In fact, I'll go with you and help you out. People see me with you, why, they might be a little more willing to talk to you.
Good idea.
The two men started at the saloon. Falcon, who had eaten nothing but trail food for the last several days, had a meal of spiced beef, beans, and rolled tortillas. He sat at a table in the back of the room while Meeker, with great fanfare, called people over one at a time to ask if any of them had seen Fargo Ford.
Yeah, I seen him a few days ago.
You seen him, Billy? All right. Billy Cates, this here is my friend Falcon McAllister.
Pleased to meet you. Where'd you see him?
He come in here with three other men. They was all talking to Frederica and Ava, but I didn't know what they was talking about. It's too far away to hear them.
Did he say anything to you?
To me? No, sir. Look, this here ain't something I'm very proud of, but I used to ride some with Ford. Me and Ponce Elliott and Les Wilson. But that was a long time ago, and I've been on the up and up ever since then. You gonna ask the sheriff about that?
Yep, Billy's telling you the truth. He's ridden the straight and narrow for a long time now.
If you want, I'll send Frederica and Ava over so you can talk to them. And maybe they could tell you what they was talking about.
Soon the two bar girls stood in front of the table, looking with admiration at the tall, handsome man before them.
I know nothing about them. I know only they asked for Susie.
After learning that Fargo Ford had been in town recently, Falcon spent the rest of the day talking to everyone who knew him in order to get as good a picture as he could of the man's habits. By nightfall, he had gathered enough information to give him an educated guess on the best way to track him down. Falcon took a room in the hotel, spending the night in bed, his first night in bed in several nights. It was still dark when Falcon left town the next morning. Later that morning, the undertaker came up front to close the caskets of the two bodies. He was taken momentarily aback when he noticed that the male corpse was now wearing a hat.
Good heavens, that's odd.
Reaching into the coffin, he carefully removed the hat. Ponce Elliott had been scalped. Dagan, Monroe, Casey, and Fargo looked through the cave where Ponce had done his self-amputation to see if they could find the money.
Oh, God, it still stinks in here.
You can put up with a little stink.
A little stink? We could be up to our bottom lip in shit and it wouldn't stink this much.
What the hell are we looking for? Is the money in a bag or what?
Could be, but like as not, it's...
Fargo froze, then leaned over and started tossing a few rocks aside.
Have you found something?
Fargo pulled out a set of saddlebags, then opened the flap and looked inside.
Here it is, boys.
The money's there. Hot damn, let's divide it up.
Not here.
Dagan looked at the other two men who were behind him. Then he looked back at Fargo. Fargo was holding the saddlebags and looking down inside. He didn't notice Dagan pulling his gun out.
Yeah, Fargo. Let's do it here.
Shut up, Dagan. I'm in charge here, and I'll decide when and where we divide the money. Ah!
Fargo dropped the saddlebags and put his hand over his chest wound.
Ah! You son of a bitch. You killed me.
Yeah.
Monroe and Casey looked on with shock.
What the hell'd you do that for?
I don't think that son of a bitch had any intention of dividing up that money. I think he was planning on stringing us along for a while. Then first chance he got, he was going to run out on us.
When do you plan on dividing the money?
Right now. Just as soon as we get out of this fucking stink.
Leaving Fargo dead inside the cave, the three bandits walked outside into the bright sunlight.
God damn. Feels good to be able to breathe again.
Yeah, I don't know how much longer I could have stayed in there.
If you think it stinks in there now, What's it gonna be like when old Fargo gets ripe?
Ain't gonna be much worse than it was. Fargo stunk to begin with.
Dagan dumped the money out onto the ground. Then the three men squatted down around it and began counting it out. It totaled $14,200.
That's a couple of $100 short, ain't it?
Ponty must have taken some of it.
Maybe, but don't forget, Fargo had the bag. We ought to go back in and make sure he didn't stash some in his clothes quick-like when he found it.
The outlaws began stuffing the dollar packs into their pockets and down their shirts and boots.
Hell, you want it, you can go back in and get it. I doubt he has $100 on him, and for me, that ain't worth going back into that stinkhole for.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. So where do we go now?
Anywhere we want to go. We don't even have to stay together no more if and we don't want to.
Yeah, but till we get back to town, it might be better if we stayed together. I heard talk of some renegade Indians. I don't want to run into any all by myself.
Monroe's right. I say we stay together till we get back to Sasabi Flat.
Yeah, we can't go back there.
Why not? They got whiskey, whores, and food there.
Fargo killed one of them whores, remember? And he killed the bartender, too.
Oh, yeah. Damn, where can we go?
How about Providence, Wales? They got whiskey, whores, and food there, too. And there ain't none of us ever been there, so there won't be no one there that knows us.
Good idea.
The men started back to their horses.
Oh, shit. What about Fargo's horse? Should we take him with us?
Why?
We can sell him.
We got enough money. We don't need to be bothered with trying to sell no damn horse.
Well, it don't seem right just to leave him here. Son of a bitch, Dagan.
Now it won't bother him to stay here. Let's go.
Falcon McAllister saw the vultures from at least a mile away. As he drew closer, he saw a large brown form on the ground, and he knew that it was a horse. It looked as if one of the horses had gone down, leaving the outlaws with four men and three horses. Although he felt bad about the horse, he knew it would also slow the men down somewhat and make it easier for him to track them. But something didn't look quite right when Falcon finally reached the horse. He couldn't put his finger on what was bothering him. Maybe it was just intuition. Whatever it was, Falcon decided it was worth a closer look. Kneeling beside the horse, he ran his hand along the legs, but he couldn't find any sign of a broken bone.
What happened here? If you didn't go lame on them, why would they shoot you and leave themselves one horse short?
The animal hadn't been dead long. Falcon stood up, then removed his hat and ran his hand through his hair. Looking around, he saw a set of saddlebags lying open near a boulder. Looking back at the dead horse, he saw that the horse had its own saddlebags. Falcon walked over for a closer look at the saddlebags near the boulder, and when he stuck his hand down inside, he pulled out a little paper band. The kind of paper band that's wrapped around stacks of money. He read the printing on the band.
$100, Western Express Company.
Looking around the area, Falcon saw the opening to a cave. Pulling his pistol, he moved up to one side of the opening, then cautiously looked inside. An overwhelming stench came from inside the cave.
Oh, God Almighty!
He took a few steps inside. As Falcon's eyes adjusted, he could just make out the body of Fargo Ford lying dead on the ground. Falcon pulled his knife and went to work. It was after dark when Falcon got to Providence Wells. Dismounting in front of the saloon, he walked along all the horses that were tied to the hitching rail, then saw one that he had seen before. It was one of the horses Pete Tucker had been holding during the botched holdup attempt back in Calabasas. The men he was looking for were here. Going inside the saloon, Falcon looked around, but he didn't see anyone he recognized. He approached the bar.
Yes, sir. What'll it be?
Beer.
Coming up.
Falcon decided against asking for any specific information, believing he could find out more just by being quiet and observing. He had just about finished his drink when a girl came down the stairs and stepped up to the bar. One eye was red and swollen.
Good Lord, girl, what happened to you?
Nothing.
Don't tell me nothing. You've got a big damn shiner there.
Forget it. He wants a bottle of whiskey.
Did that fella hit you?
The bartender reached up to touch the girl's eye, but she pulled away from him.
Let it be, Sam. I don't want no trouble.
Well, Kitty, it looks to me like you've already got it. What's going on up there? You want me to go tell him his time is up?
No, I don't. It's all right. Nothing's going on. Nothing. Anyway, it ain't just him. There's three of them, so don't start no trouble.
Three of them, you say?
Well, don't get me wrong. They aren't all three with me. The other two are with other girls.
You know these three men, mister?
I ain't sure. When'd they get into town?
No more than a couple hours ago. First, we was glad to see them because they're spending money like water, but the drunker they get, the meaner they get, and right now I'd like to see them be on their way, money or no. Kitty, forget the damn money. You don't have to go back up there. Not if he's beating you.
I ain't forgetting no damn money, Sam. I just don't want no trouble from you, that's all.
Kitty started for the stairs with the bottle, but by the time she reached the bottom step, Dagon, wearing only his trousers and gun belt, appeared at the railing on the upper balcony. Falcon recognized him at once as one of the men he had seen back in Calabasas, and he turned toward the bar and pulled his hat down.
Hey, you bitch. Sent you down there to get a bottle of whiskey. Not to have a quilting bee. You've been down there long enough. Get your ass back up here.
Mister, she's already been up there long enough.
What do you mean she's been up here long enough? I'm paying. I decide when she's been up here long enough.
Well, you know how it is. I mean, she's a working girl. There's other gents in here wanting her time, too. I can't let just one man have all her time. Why, how'd it be if you was waiting on her right now?
I am waiting on her. I'm waiting on her to bring up the goddamn whiskey. But I want to be fair about it. Now, who's waiting for Kitty? Huh? Who else wants her?
The bar girl looked out over the floor, her eyes showing an expression of desperate hope that someone would back up the bartender. But the other men, who didn't want any trouble, managed to avoid the girl's pleading look.
Well, how about that? Everybody changed their minds. Now I don't feel all guilty. So get your ass back up here, girl.
The girl shut her eyes tightly, squeezing out a tear. She started up the stairs, then stopped. Clenching her hands into fists, she shook her head resolutely.
No!
What do you mean, no? I paid for you, bitch. You belong to me.
The girl put her hand down in a dress pocket, then pulled out two crumpled bills.
Here's your money. I'll give it back to you.
Dagon pulled his pistol and pointed it toward the girl.
I don't want my money. I want you. Now you get back up here, or I'm going to put a bullet right between your eyes.
Excuse me, miss. If you're not too busy right now, I'd sure like a little of your time.
Dagon looked toward Falcon and recognized him.
You're Falcon McAllister, eh? I thought we killed you.
You thought wrong.
What are you doing here now?
I thought I might have a drink. Spend a little time with a woman. That woman.
Uh-uh. Better pick yourself another one. This one's coming back up with me.
I don't think she wants to do that. And I don't want her to do it either.
What the hell do I care what she wants? She's got no choice. Neither do you, mister. I got my gun in my hand.
Oh yeah, I see the gun. But what are you gonna do with it?
What do you mean, what am I gonna do with it?
Well, here's the thing. You're pointing that gun at a girl. She's not your problem now. I am. If you move it toward me, I'm gonna kill you. If you shoot her, I'm gonna kill you. If you so much as twitch, I'm gonna kill you. In fact, the only way you're gonna get out of this alive is to drop your gun right now.
You're fucking crazy. Your gun's still in your holster. And if you don't get out of here right now, I'm gonna kill this girl.
Prove it.
Dagon swung his gun toward Falcon. Diggins' shot smashed into the mirror behind the bar, scattering shards of glass. In one motion, Falcon had his own gun out. Diggins lay motionless with open but sightless eyes staring toward the ceiling. The saloon patrons, who had scattered when the first shot was fired, now began to edge toward the body. Up on the second floor landing, a half dozen girls and their customers in various stages of undress moved to the smash railing to look down on the scene. When Casey heard the shooting, he had jumped from the bed and grabbed his gun, then ran out into the hall with the others. He ran now to the head of the stairs and looked down to the saloon below. He saw Dagan lying on his back, his gun on the floor beside him, and a tall man with a smoking gun in his hand standing over Dagan, looking down at him. Casey panicked. The bullet from Casey's gun buzzed by Falcon's ear and plunged into the floor beside him. Falcon looked up, but couldn't return fire because of all the people around Casey. Casey turned and ran back down the hall. Falcon ran up the stairs, taking them two at a time. Just as he reached the top of the stairs, he saw the second door down on the right side closing. He looked at one of the women, who was cowering in fear on the opposite side of the hall. Silently, he used his pistol to indicate the door he had just seen shut, and with a quick nod, she verified it was where Casey had gone.
Everyone get downstairs now.
Falcon cautiously moved to the door.
Bastard's trying to get out the window.
Falcon kicked open the door, then ran inside. The back window was smashed out, and he stepped over to look through it, then sensed someone moving up behind him. Falcon turned just as Casey was bringing his gun down to smash him on the head. Falcon managed to deflect the blow, moving it away from his head onto his shoulder. Numbing, shooting pain caused him to drop his pistol. Unarmed now, Falcon had no recourse but to wrap his arms around his assailant in a bear hug. Had the effect of pinning Casey's arms by his sides, and now he could not raise his pistol. Falcon felt all the strength suddenly leave Casey's body. Carefully, Falcon raised up from him and saw the bloody shard of window glass sticking up through Casey's neck. Casey was dead in a second. When Falcon stepped back out into the hallway, he saw a girl exiting from another bedroom.
Sam, my customer jumped out the damn window and rode off on his horse. And that shithead hadn't paid me yet neither.
Son of a bitch. That'd be Monroe.
By the time Falcon got back downstairs, the sheriff had arrived.
Mister, you've got some explaining to do.
My name is Falcon McAllister. Get in touch with Sheriff Corbin at Oro Blanco. He'll tell you what the hell this is all about.
McAllister? Oh, hell then. I don't have to get in touch with him. He's already sent me a letter about you. Fact is, he sent every sheriff in this part of the territory a letter explaining what you're up to.
Did he tell you everything I'm doing?
Falcon looked gravely down toward Dagan's body.
Like what I promised to do in order to stop an Indian war?
Yes, sir, he did. Just don't do it here. I'll have the bodies taken down to the Undertaker's office. You can do what has to be done there.
Much obliged, Sheriff.
Jane Stockdale was removing dry linens from her clothesline. She pulled the wooden pins from a large bedsheet, then took it down. Removing the bedsheet exposed a man standing behind it. He was holding a pistol.
Where's your man at?
He's in the house. And if he sees you here, he will shoot you.
Is that a fact?
Yes.
I don't believe you. If your man was here, he'd be out here right now wanting to know what was going on. That is, if he had any balls.
He's here.
Uh-huh. Then who was that man and kid I seen leaving in the buckboard about 15 minutes ago?
Who are you? What do you want?
Name's Monroe. And what I want is a little food, that's all. Just a little food, and I'll be on my way.
All right. I would never want it said that I turned away a hungry man.
Jane started toward the house.
Hey, wait a minute. I know who you are. You was on that stage, wasn't you?
Jane had realized almost from the moment she first saw Monroe that he was one of the men who had robbed the stage, killed the shotgun guard, and later killed Cloud Dancer. But she had thought it might be dangerous to let him know that she recognized him, so she had not challenged him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The hell you don't. You was on that stage, all right. You, your kid, a drummer, an engine girl, and McAllister.
Why did you kill her? Why did you kill Cloud Dancer?
Cloud Dancer? That was her name? Oh, fucking Indians. Anyway, that wasn't me.
Monroe was about to tell her that it was Ponce who had killed her, that he didn't have anything to do with it. But he changed his mind, deciding it might be better if she feared him.
I killed her because she wouldn't do what I wanted her to do. You get my meaning?
I suppose I do.
Good. Good. I'm glad we understand each other. So, just to show me that you do understand, I want you to take off your clothes.
What?
You heard me. I said take off your clothes.
I thought you were hungry. Let me get you something to eat.
There'll be plenty of time for food later. Take off the clothes.
Please, don't make me do this.
I ain't gonna ask you again.
Slowly, reluctantly, and fearfully, Jane began unbuttoning her dress. She pulled the dress over her head, then began unlacing the camisole. When she had it completely unlaced, she looked at him pleadingly.
Please!
Monroe's eyes were clouded with lust, and Jane thought she could see something red deep down inside him. She opened the camisole and felt the effect of the air on her bare skin. Jane just looked down at Monroe's body as she numbly replaced the front of her camisole. She had covered herself by the time the man who shot Monroe came walking up.
Mr. McAllister, thank God. I might have guessed it was you.
She turned her back to Falcon as she continued to lace up the camisole.
I'm all right. If you'll forgive me, I'll try and recover my modesty, if not my dignity.
You don't need to worry about that, Mrs. Stockdale. Your dignity was never compromised.
Globinanta, you have killed 5 of your white brothers.
They were white, but they were not my brothers.
You also killed 6 Apache.
I killed only 5. One of your brothers was killed by another.
They were Apache, but they were not my brothers.
Gitano put his hand on Falcon's shoulder, and Falcon did the same.
You and I are brothers.
It's good to hear you say that, Gitano, because I've got a silver mine that needs to be worked. And as it turns out, it's pretty close to your territory.
Hear me. This is Globinanta. From this day forward, he is my brother. For him, I will be a white man. And for me, he will be an Apache.
Gitano, I thank you for that.
It's okay, for I know you will share 20% of your silver mine with me.
You want 20% of my silver mine?
Yes. Is it not the way of the white man to take what is not his?
Gitano, all I've got to say is, you're one hell of a fast learner.
Revenge of Eagles is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, David Coyne, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Erica Rose, Tim Carlin, Michael Replogle, Kate Torrey, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Michael Glenn, Karen Carbone, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, and Maria Pino. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Casey Jones. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Revenge of Eagles, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond series, available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
MacBolan number 103, Season of Slaughter.
Welcome to Washington Dulles International Airport.
Sir, we'd like to take a look inside your bags.
Go right ahead.
What do you have in these things?
Missile launchers.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your undivided attention for a moment?
Gun!
He's gonna fire missiles at the jets moving to take off. If he hits them in the right spot, that aviation fuel is gonna light them up. Dulles is being turned into a hell zone. Someone took out air traffic control here. We already have a passenger jet full of casualties.
Just who are you?
Someone trying to prevent more tragedies.
Cut me down. 1,000 believers will take my place. Heaven shall be victorious.
You're right. Heaven will be victorious. But you're not invited to the celebration.
The climate heats up for the executioner in MacBolan number 103, Season of Slaughter.
Calling Cerberus. Calling Cerberus. If you receive transmission, must listen closely. Offer information in exchange for asylum. Rendezvous. Repeat. Offer information for asylum. Information Tiamat Memph Buffer. Have info on memory buff of Tiamat.
Kane and the Cerberus warriors have just one chance to stop a rogue overlord from making a grab for absolute power.
Behold!
We've got a skull made out of quartz crystal. Picked it up in Pakistan the day before yesterday.
Really? Oh, this is better than I hoped. Two at hand, only 11 more to go. And as fortune would have it, I know just where they are.
What was that Sindri said about 11 more skulls?
According to legends among certain South American Indian tribes, there are 13 crystal skulls in existence. These skulls represented 12 planets and were originally kept in a Mayan pyramid within a circle formation. A 13th larger crystal skull represented the collective consciousness of the 12 and was placed in the center of the circle. This circle formation of the 12 crystal skulls, with one larger crystal skull in the center, was known as the Throne of Ascension.
A skull throne, in other words.
The only mystery is how to stop Overlord Nergal from laying claim to them.
It means joining forces with a Mayan goddess and two old enemies to win a race against time for the capture or destruction of an artifact long lost in the Mayan jungle.
With them, Nergal thinks he can gain control over Tiamat's neuronic systems, her main memory core.
Is gaining control over Tiamat even possible?
The crystal skulls are data transfer interfaces with the computer systems aboard Tiamat. Much like a wireless communication network that processes electronic and telemetric signals.
And the pyramid in the city is a transmission tower. That's why Nergal has been seeking out all the skulls, so he can reactivate it.
What the hell was all of that?
Holography.
A hologram of what, though?
It looked like a Mayan pyramid. Kane and I had to fight our way out of one a few years back.
The so-called lost city of Z, or X, of Xibalba, is not just a hiding place for the Maya's sacred relics, but was also used as a remote transmission station.
The secrets of Xibalba could help secure the contested prize of planet Earth.
So, when do we go?
Shit!
Outlanders number 41. Skull Throne.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.